The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horrifically named podcast. It's a terrible name for a podcast, but the QA is the important part because that's our question and answer. It's where we want to have a fun conversation. We want to see folks drop in some comments down in the chat. We've got a whole slew of tech news to get through. My voice is in bad shape. So I don't know that I can hang for my normal two-hour let's hang out and chat extravaganza. We might have to call this a little earlier this week. But I do want to say shout out. I see some folks on the Instagrams. I'm seeing Apots. I'm seeing El Mundo. I'm seeing Al Greg on the main feed. I've got Barry. I've got J-Man. I've got Gormlord, Joe, ER, Pup on Tech, Lampros, Vince Nova, Ron Guido. I know I saw Dave Burns and Copycash in there too. We got a lot going on. So first of all, I just want to say I hope everybody had a lovely weekend. Again, in the United States, this Sunday was Mother's Day. We showered Marie with cards and gifts and fun breakfasts and pastries. And then we spent most of Sunday just hanging out by the pool. Our little condo complex, the pool has been down for almost a year. And it finally has opened back up. And it was like, all right. Mother's Day, we're just going to hang out by the pool all day. So, it was good times. I hope everybody else out there, again, for these days, I know it's easy to get cynical because, like, every day is a holiday. And every day is, like, a greeting card holiday, not, like, a legit holiday. But I kind of like taking that back. I like, not necessarily, like, well, it's the consumerism of having to spend all this money on gifts for people because consumerism. Because late stage capitalism, but I like to take those days and just like, doesn't mean that we can't use it just to do something fun or something special or try to make a memory. I've got a bunch of photos now of Lex just hanging out by the pool and it was a really nice day. So if you were celebrating the Mother's Day, I hope you and the mothers in your life had a very lovely Mother's Day holiday. So, but now it's Happy Monday time and we've got a ton of stuff to get through. I'm going to make just a little adjustment right there. N-Man watching from the Philippines. Thank you for tuning in from the Philippines. Yeah, that's great. So, Owen Lampros, keep it short. We'll miss you, but your health comes first. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Simon says, Hypno, it's International Day of Internation Days. I don't know what that means. And Septian, I was just chilling yesterday as well. I was glad Mother's Day wasn't on the same day as my birthday this year. You know, again, that, you know, your birthday is kind of a Mother's Day, Sep. You know, the whole reason why you exist is biologically. I don't want to get too into the nuts and bolts of how all that stuff works, you know, the birds and the bees. But yeah, you know, if your birthday lands on Mother's Day, you know, you could give her a nudge and just say, hey, I exist. Thanks. So folks, we've got so much to cover. I want to jump right into some housekeeping. This has been an exciting couple of weeks. We've been going from embargo to embargo to embargo. I still have a couple things on my desk that I cannot show you yet. I keep almost making mistakes. I'm setting this up, and for those of you here on the Instagram feed, I use my Xperia to do the Instagram live feed. I've got my two cameras just kind of stacked as close as I can get them so that it's weird when I'm looking back and forth between two different feeds. Got it all set up this morning, had everything all kind of attached, went to go hit play, and it wasn't my Xperia 1 Mark IV that was set up, it was my Xperia 1 Mark V. And I don't have Instagram set up because it's a prototype, I don't put all my personal stuff on that, on prototype review devices. And so we're literally like a minute to me pushing live, and I'm unscrewing and doing a bracket and moving this phone in there and taking that out, and then push go. So it's always a little bit of an adventure. The thing I love about doing live, like especially when I was doing a lot of live TV, is it's utter calamity until you're on camera. And then you're like, oh, I guess we do a show now. It doesn't matter if everything's broken. We still have like the next 120, 180 seconds. I got to fill that time. All right, here's something you didn't know about your phone. And then you go and it's great. So, no, so Farhan, is it the new 1.5 or the 1.4 for the Instagram screen? The stream is going on my Xperia 1 Mark IV so that I can hold up and use as a prop the Xperia 1 Mark V. So when we get into the gadget block, the second half of our podcast, I don't have a lot planned. I've got just some loose notes just on talking about all the various tech and gadgets and gizmos that have come out. We could spend some time talking about Google I.O., depending on where the chat goes, if you guys have any questions or you guys want to talk about that. But the main thing that I've been digging into is the Xperia 1 Mark V and just a screamer of a little mid-ranger phone, the Poco F5. And if you're a fan of the more flagship killer aesthetic from a Poco, we talked about this on Best of Our Week. TK and I have both been playing with this phone. Please watch both of our videos about this phone. But it's really helping to highlight how ridiculously overpowered even our mid-ranger phones are now. So this launched sub $400. So I've got a lot to say about the Poco F5, and obviously it's high on the list for probably one of my favorite phones of the year is Xperia 1 Mark V. So let's knock out some housekeeping. Let's get that out of the week. Dave Burns, someone been screaming too much about Sony this week. I have been screaming a lot about Sony this week. And CH Gadgets, this is my TK Bay hat. So support your buddies, support your pals, buy their merch. TK Bay is one of the best people I know. So please, definitely, if you're of the means to pick up something, grab his cap. I really like his ball cap. Septian, bro, that Xperia has 4K 120 frames per second on all the lenses. Yep, Sep, that is what I've been trying to tell people. The Xperia 1 Mark IV has it too, and it's really good, and I feel people are missing out on some awesome slow motion. All right, let me jump into somegadgetguy.com, because these are the biggies. So screen sharing this right here. The first video that I put out this last week, Poco F5, Snapdragon 7 Plus Gen 2, talking about performance and really using this as a little mini pocket computer, and it's a screamer. That Poco F5 video is doing pretty well. Similarly, like a day later, we had to take the wraps off. I went from like, what was it? It was like a 3 a.m. embargo Pacific time for the Poco, and then immediately into like a midnight embargo for the Xperia, and they were just stacked back to back. I think this is one of the reasons why my sore throat from 2 weeks ago has not cleared up, because I'm just constantly in this like boom bust production cycle. But I have a first look video at the Xperia 1 Mark V, and then I also produced an Xperia 1 Mark V versus Xperia 1 Mark IV comparison, just to talk about some of the differences between those two phones. And I still need to add to that, because I completely forgot to include my speaker samples. So I'm probably going to put together just like a little twofer, like a back-to-back on the Patreon, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. And then in a future video for the Xperia 1 Mark V, we'll do kind of a recap on that. I was so mad. I was flying so fast. I had it all lined up. I had the samples ready to go. I had the entire video. All of that was looking good, and I pushed render, and I uploaded, and I published it, and I went to bed, and then I woke up and went, oh, right. But there was like a whole extra section of things that were supposed to be improved and talked about, and I completely spaced. So that's going to be coming to the channel too. And then I just want to highlight this, because this one's kind of a big deal too. I do a whole bunch of benchmarks. I test performance in a whole bunch of ways. The least important way to test performance is the least important way to test comparative performance is using Geekbench or AnTuTu. Those scores tell you nothing about how two different phones compare against each other for getting specific tasks done. The only thing they tell you is how well they run Geekbench or AnTuTu. So I do a whole bunch of real-world app testing. I test video rendering performance. I have a couple different video tests. I test audio and podcast mixing. I do like something that's more CPU bound. I do some file compression testing. And then I also do a lot of batch photo processing. So just dumping a ton of raw files onto a phone, timing the completion of that task and seeing how that compares to other devices. And wouldn't you know it, when you line up Geekbench scores, those Geekbench scores never, ever, they never predict what phones are going to be fastest in specific tasks. So if all you do on your phone is use the Geekbench or the AnTuTu, then that's great. Use those. But if you do anything else on your phone, those big number scores don't tell you anything. So on the Patreon, patreon.com/somegadgetguy, I've got a full new spreadsheet and bar graph charts for every new device that I put out there. So this is comparing the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 against the Snapdragon 7 Plus Gen 2 against a Tensor G2 against a Dimensity 9200 and a Dimensity 9000. So with a OnePlus Pad, a Vivo X90, a Pixel 7 Pro, a Poco F5, a Xiaomi 13 and a Xiaomi 13 Ultra, Galaxy Note 23, OnePlus 11, iQOO 11, and the Xperia 1 Mark 5 all listed down. Do you want to know which phone is the fastest at rendering video? That one I'll spoil for you. It's the Pixel 7 Pro. It gets the smallest Geekbench scores. But if you're making TikToks and Reels and Shorts and Instagrams and all that fun stuff, the Pixel is the fastest platform available for rendering video. Huh. But the AnTuTu score is so small. So, That's all now collected into one massive list of benchmarking scores. And you can catch that on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/somegadgetguy. All right, that's going to do us for housekeeping. I'm going to take a quick slurp of coffee. Please pardon. Oh, I'm going to mute. I'm going to try to mute. I can't mute you. I'm sorry. So please pardon the ASMR here for just a second. All right. So Gormlord has a question about the Xperia 5 Mark V. Save that for the second half of the podcast, and we can absolutely chat about what we might think about the Xperia 5 Mark V. Pup on Tech. The only thing I run on my phone is Geekbench. Who the heck uses their phone for anything else? True words, Pup on Tech. That's it. It's just a specs measuring contest, right? You just whip it out and measure the specs. I was trying to make that sound as gross as I possibly can. Dave Burns, if you guys keep bringing up Geekbench, we can ruin his voice for a whole other week. And Tech Lovin' Mama is waving to everybody in the chat. Everybody say hey, Tech Lovin' Mama. All right, let's knock out some news. We got some articles here, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on any of these. Interestingly enough, we've got one that's just sort of like a warning for consumers out there, and then we've got a couple articles here that I really feel are just those. Either they add to another story that we've already been talking to death, or they're things that we should keep an eye on. So there's nothing big, conclusive, like, oh my gosh, this is huge news here, right now, what's going on? It's more the ebb and flow of tech commentary beyond just the headline. It's what I love about doing my podcast on a Monday. So, first one is, I am sure you probably know someone in your circles of family and friends who might be using a Peloton bicycle. So if you do, there is an advisory from Peloton. From 2.2 million bikes are being recalled. Please stop using them immediately, the government says. Peloton has received 35 reports of seat post braking and detaching from the bike during use, including 13 reports of injuries, including a fractured wrist, lacerations and bruises due to falling from the bike. So, if you're using the Peloton and it's a system that you enjoy, please stop. Please check your bike model and immediately stop using it if you are affected by that kind of issue. And it's one of those things, like, it's not whether or not it's a good or a bad look for Peloton. What we're trying to accomplish here is the signal boosting to make sure no one else gets hurt. 13 reports of injuries. That's not like a huge number. But if the potential number of people is somewhere around 2.2 million who could be affected by this, you want to make sure all of those people get the word on that. So for whatever you might feel about Peloton, or if you enjoy their products or not, that's not really the point here. The point here is we don't want to see anyone else get hurt. And that's why recalls, especially these government-backed recalls, are so important. I got to just push pause here real quick. Jman150 gifting a tier one sub on the Twitch. Gifting a sub to Gormlord. I still don't have a soundboard. Still don't have one. Haven't set one up. Don't know what's going on. That's how we make up for my lack. But I do appreciate the support. And at some point, that support is going to force me to really step up my Twitch streaming game, which is pretty lax. So we've got Mauricio from Mexico watching on his lovely LG V60. What's up, Mauricio? And we got Miller. Hey, local tech guy, how are you liking the Xperia 1 Mark V versus the Pro I? Oh, so in the second half of the podcast, we're going to be chatting Xperia 1 Mark V heavy. So bring back that question, and we will absolutely talk about what some of my early thoughts are comparing it against the Pro I, which is a flippin' gorgeous phone. All right. We got a bunch of... Simon says Hypno. That's pretty funny. Peloton literally sounds like a pain in the arse. Does he get it? Because the seat breaks and it detaches and you fall off the bike? Your bottom? I see what you did there. That's pretty good. All right, moving right along in the continued shenanigans of social, like last week and the week before, it's just been really heavy news talking about social media is kind of melting down all around us right now. And TikTok is regularly in the spotlight. And I don't personally have any issues if TikTok were to vanish tomorrow. I wasn't a fan of Vine, and I called the demise of Vine at a social media conference like a year before Vine was actually killed. And I don't care. I don't love short snippet video sharing services. That's not the kind of content I enjoy. It doesn't bother me. But what does bother me is trying to pick on specific companies for some abuses and not applying that as a regulatory action across all of social media. If we're going to say that what TikTok does is bad, which I agree, the algorithmic sorted content on TikTok is bad for people, we also need to acknowledge that they didn't start it. And we should also be going after every other algorithmically sorted social media service like YouTube and Facebook
and Instagram and Twitter with that same energy. Bring that same energy. But because this is such a specific part of this conversation, this is a Reuters story. Again, I don't think Reuters really publishes who writes up these individual stories. Former ByteDance executive says he was dismissed for flagging illegal activity. A former head of engineering at ByteDance in the United States has said the company discharged him after he voiced concern to management that it was taking user content from other platforms, mainly Instagram and Snapchat. The dispute comes at a time when ByteDance-owned TikTok faces growing calls for a nationwide ban from some U.S. lawmakers regarding concerns about potential Chinese government influence over it. Now, how funny would it be? Because we're not going to do the right thing by consumers. Politicians aren't going to do the right thing because it's the right thing. They're going to do the thing that kind of benefits their corporate donors, right? That's kind of the general concern. You have some outliers like a Bernie Sanders, who really does sort of stand for what he stands for and has a very consistent voting record on that kind of stuff. But on the whole, if a company makes a ton of money, they get to break rules that a smaller company can't make, like Apple. Apple can steal IP, but if someone stole Apple's IP, they'd be sued into oblivion. Whew. When it comes to this, how funny will it be if we see some kind of regulatory action on the part of TikTok, not because this algorithmically sorted content is bad for consumers, not the end users, we don't care about them, we care about the intellectual property of other platforms. If they stole content from Instagram and they scraped content from Snapchat, well, then they stole the IP of those other services, and we can't have that. Again, it's the same thing when, like, artificial intelligence goes and wrecks the livelihood of people that are, like, writing technical manuals or writing scripts, like the WGA strike that's happening in Hollywood right now. We don't really care about I don't care that a writer in Hollywood who wrote an Emmy award-winning show can't pay their rent and that they can't afford to buy a home. I don't care about that. Oh, no, but Disney's intellectual property might be infringed upon? Well, we've got to do something about this AI. And watch it be the same thing here. We don't care that it's toxic. We don't care that ByteDance is, like, focusing harmful material to minors. We don't care about the psychological implications of end users, this whole mess of social... Oh, but wait, did they steal IP? Can't have that. No. That's bad. So a company that makes a lot of money is going to make a little bit less money. And that's... Oh, boy. Oh man, gotta jump on that. So, those kinds of allegations, watch that. Watch that. That's why I'm bringing up this specific article. Watch that be the new sort of tactic or direction to kind of encourage more scrutiny over TikTok's business practices, which is hilarious because all social media is just a circling. I almost said something a little blue, is just a circling of repetitive content. Like my Reddit feed, even though I take great pains to kind of prune my Reddit feed, it's all content that I've seen before. It's just getting recycled and regurgitated and recycled and regurgitated. And we actually have another story about that here in just a sec.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
So our next story up here. So one of the reasons why content keeps getting regurgitated like that, apparently, this is coming by way of securitymagazine.com, written up by security staff. So I don't think this is a very big blog, but I'd really like to see, I've read a little about this report, I haven't dug into it a lot. But here, let me actually put this up on the screen here. Excuse me. 47% of all internet traffic came from bots in 2022. Almost half of the traffic that is tying up bandwidth on the internet is not coming from people. And in an era where language learning model AIs are starting to really take root, we're eventually just going to be having machines talk to machines. We're going to be paying slave wages on manual labor. Like, we can't replace people at fast food restaurants or in construction work. You need humans to do this back-breaking manual labor. But robots and AIs get to write poetry and get to do art. And that's not really the luxurious future I had imagined in a world of AI. I digress from the article. A new report reveals that in 2022, 47.4% of all internet traffic came from bots, a 5.1% increase over the previous year. The same report showed that human traffic at 52.6% decreased to its lowest level in 8 years. So this is a report by Bad Bot Report. So I'm going to dig into that a little bit more just to see what their metric of rating or quantifying traffic really resembles. Like, how do they pull their numbers? Where do they source their information? And how are they working with ISPs to verify those claims? But I think we all kind of have a feeling whether or not it's actually true. I think we've got a vibe that, like, so much of what we see is kind of just SEO farming. You know, like, you search for something on the Google or on the Bing, and you get articles that keyword what you're asking about, but don't really contribute to the conversation. And so much of the internet feels like it's kind of withering. I forget what the name of it is. It's like not a creepypasta, not an ARG or anything like that. But I'm really into kind of like alternate reality gaming and horror content online. You know, you love that kind of like that kind of tickle, that thrill of finding like a new conspiracy, a fun conspiracy, something like the Mandela Effect. That would be a good example for me. I like that kind of science fiction-y kind of content. And I can't remember what it's called, but I want to say it's something like the dead internet theory, that like you search for a topic on Google and you see that Google has millions of articles and millions of search results, and then you click two pages deep, you get a page two and it's all still fresh content. And then you go to page three and it's all the same content. And you go to page four and it's all the same content. And you go to page five, it's all the same content. I want to say, is it the dead internet theory? Can someone please check me on that? I can't remember what it's called. But now, with AIs just scraping the internet to regurgitate information and talk to other language models, and that's all just sort of swirling itself, it really is starting to feel like there is no fresh content on the internet, and that everything is just sort of descending into this pool of regurgitated mush. But yeah, so according to Security Magazine, 47% of all internet traffic, bots. And imagine if we went after bots. We could, like, reduce server load. We could scale back on data center costs. Like, everything would be less expensive. The corporations running this stuff would find a benefit in kind of policing how autonomous internet traffic is managed and handled. And it's kind of a shame, because it would be better for users, and it would be better for corporations, but, you know, I guess there's just nothing we can do about it. It's just all terrible. Moving right along, this is kind of a biggie, and this is just the beginning of an investigation that we'll have to keep an eye on. And again, like I mentioned previously, there are some companies that can deliver products at scale. Apple is a company where if they make a mistake, they make a mistake to the tune of hundreds of millions of products. And it's kind of a big deal, and I feel like our reaction to that should be equal to the problem or to the scale that Apple can deliver a problem. This is another story from Reuters. Italy's antitrust watchdog probes Apple over alleged app market abuse. again. Okay, this one actually does have a byline. Alvis Armellini, I have mispronounced your name, and I apologize, and Elvira Polina. And so I want to get this here. In Italy's antitrust agency, the AGCM, said on Thursday it had opened a probe into U.S. technology giant Apple for alleged abuse of its dominant position in the apps market. And then later in the article, they quote, Apple's alleged discriminatory conduct may cause a fall in advertising revenues for third-party advertisers to the benefit of Apple's commercial division. Third-party app developers are also offered less comprehensive information about the success of their ad campaigns. According to the Italian watchdog, users of non-Apple apps have more visible and more strongly worded prompts to block data tracking. And that's something that we've talked about on this podcast before. If you have a Facebook and you install it on an iPhone, boy, warnings, tracking your data. Ooh, scary. Except for the fact that your iPhone is also tracking everything that you do, and you do not get the same disclosures and the same abilities to block that fingerprinting data, the data that can identify who you are. All of that gets sent up to an Apple server. Now, we can say, oh, but it means I get a better iPhone and I like Apple services. Fine. But from a legal sense, Apple should not be able to do something with their own services that they prevent their competitors from doing, and they should not have a platform where they can make their competitors for data tracking look like they're doing something disreputable when they're doing the same thing to profit off of that same information and that same data. So this is a very interesting case because it's ahead of an EU investigation into the same business practices. Apparently, Italy didn't wait for an entire EU conclusion on this. They are now opening their own specific investigation into antitrust issues on iOS devices. And I don't know how anyone else feels about the nuances or the differences of like having an app store versus being able to sideload apps, or Google was apparently sort of engaging in very similar business practices too. The whataboutisms are important because we want to make sure that no company replicates this same kind of consumer harm. But that also means you need to go after the biggest source of the consumer harm first. So if Apple is doing this and they're found that they are askew of Italian regulations, that's not the word. That's not the word that you would use for this. But if Italy determines that this is a bad business practice, I need to pull this up. Under European Union competition law, companies found guilty of abuse of market dominance risk a fine of up to 10% of annual turnover. So Simon says, Hypno, a foul of, not a skew of, a foul of. 10% would be a nice little chunk of change for the EU to tag Apple for a business practice that I don't think is good for consumers. So we should be watching this. We're finally taking those baby steps into regulations actually affecting a corporate bottom line. Like, oh, you throttled the battery and CPU performance on years of iPhones without telling consumers. We're going to fine you $50 million. And you're like, yeah, but Apple made hundreds of billions of dollars on that business practice. $50 million. We have done justice. Justice has been done. $50 million. And consumers really won't see a penny of that if they ever see any money from that. And you get cheaper battery replacements. We're regulators. We have helped people. Well, 10% of Apple's annual turnover. And I feel like you need to go after revenue, not reported profits. How much money did the company bring in? Go after that. And then you make it a percentage of that. And I think 10% of their year would dissuade Apple from doing something like this, and it would be better for competition, and it would be better for Apple consumers. So fingers crossed that we actually see some kind of follow-up to these investigations and that Apple's lobbying efforts don't muddy the waters and slow down the process too much. I mean, like Gormlord, yeah, an actual punishment would be refreshing, right? It'd be really nice. I got to do just a quick pause here. Ampersand, whoop, 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 whoop. Subscribe to Prime. They've been subscribed for 17 months on the Twitch. Thank you so much for supporting. I really appreciate it. That is very awesome of you. So Gormlord, what if multiple countries hit them with that? So I believe that as an EU action, it's not like Germany and Italy and France can all apply the same punitive. It's a collective. Please correct me if I have this wrong. So Italy's investigation would contribute to the EU investigation, and then the EU investigation would be the cumulative penalty for this business practice. But, you know, England could do that. Canada could do that. The United States could then all use this as precedent in their own investigations. And similarly, you could have like an ambitious attorney general in California could start an investigation in California. Then that would contribute to a national or a federal investigation of Apple's business practices. And then eventually you would arrive at one big fine for that. So if a bunch of countries got together and actually policed this type of corporate business practice, then you'd see those fines at the top. Something tells me that if we did that to Apple in the United States, it would be a slap on the wrist. We're way too keyed up about Apple here. That they're, you know, like, they're not those Chinese manufacturers. They're not one of those foreign phones. They're American. They're an American company that has headquarters in Ireland, so they can evade paying taxes here in the United States. But they're American. Their products are designed in California. But it would be nice, right? I think we'd all agree there. Because speaking of these types of actions and issues, putting a hurt, again, let's say there was an issue like Apple stole intellectual property and put it into the Apple Watch, and then sold years of the Apple Watch, where that's bringing in billions of dollars of revenue. And then a court case actually determined, and an international committee found in favor of the plaintiff in that case, saying that Apple did steal intellectual property. Well, we would imagine that they would just immediately pull the Apple Watch from store shelves, right? Because that's what happens when you steal IP from Samsung or you steal IP from Apple. You don't get to keep selling your product and making money off of it, right? Or you very quickly come to some kind of licensing agreement for that IP. You don't spend decades in court litigating whether or not you can patent a piece of technology. You just immediately get crushed by Apple. So, I mean, obviously that's what happened, because Apple stole IP, put it in the Apple Watch, sold the Apple Watch at scale, and now you can't buy the Apple Watch anymore. Right? No, that's not what happened at all. Because here is part one of two for how Oppo is having a real bad week in the EU. But I'm going to take a quick drink, a slurp of coffee here, screen share that. Oppo wiped its German website amid EU exit rumors. Here's why. Written up by, this is from Android Authority, written up by Adamya Sharma. Reports of Oppo wiping off products from its German website started doing the rounds over the weekend. Indeed, there is no Oppo device listed on the company's official website in Germany. Instead, the page displays a banner that reads, this is translated, "No product information is currently available on our website. Some of the products are also not available in Germany, including Reno 8 series and the Find N2 Flip. We reached out to Oppo to ask if delisting products from his website was temporary. Their quoted response: in response to the commercial dispute filed against Oppo by Nokia, sales of some Oppo products temporarily are put on hold in Germany. Aside from sales and marketing of relevant products being put on hold, Oppo will continue operations in Germany. As always, users can continue to use their Oppo products, access Oppo's after-sales service, receive future OS updates, and more." So they are still going to support products. They have repair and tech support. Everything is still, the infrastructure is still there. But this also impacts OnePlus devices. So OnePlus also has been wiped out from EU websites, from German websites. And right now, I've got it on the article. OnePlus isn't selling phones, products available limited to its earbuds, accessories, and the OnePlus Pad. So the OnePlus Pad does not infringe on this Nokia 5G patent. And it was I would also read up on that. So the Android Authority, I'm going to be linking to all of these stories in my show notes in this week's blog post for the podcast, somegadgetguide.com. But to TLDR it, and I'm grossly oversimplifying how complicated this was, Nokia holds these 5G patents. HMD, who labels some products as Nokia devices, worked with that sort of system and structure to make 5G-enabled phones. Oppo did something similar, but then kind of got caught up in this Nokia dispute, and they lost their patent infringement case, and now the EU is taking that pretty seriously. So again, when you're not the number one or number two phone manufacturer, patent infringement works. Your products are pulled from the region. You can't sell them and do business in that country anymore. That's a bummer. I'm just putting this out there, and I would ask if anyone else was of like mind, that if, hey, Oppo, let's say you had a bunch of Find X6 Pros, you know, like your top-of-the-line, super awesome, camera-focused phone, and like say you built a whole bunch of them and you can't sell them now. You can't sell them in Germany, or you're worried about selling them throughout the EU. If you just bought some stickers and you called that the OnePlus 11 Ultra, you sent it here to the United States, you'd have at least like 40 people who would be all about checking out that phone and jumping on that phone and buying that phone and rocking some Hasselblad camera action. I'm just saying, if you just happen to find you have a warehouse full of devices that you can't move, and you just want to get something for them, you know, like you want to be able to sell them in a market. Maybe also build up some of your premium tier cred, where the OnePlus 11 is a great phone, but it's not a premium or a pro or an ultra or a plus. I have at least two people here in this chat right now who would be all like Dave Burns, please let me buy it. Please. Brian Glaze says he agrees. Barry Johnson, I am one of the 40. We have at least 40 people here that would take a jump on that phone. One plus me. One plus Ultra. Please. J-Man150 also jumping in. So it's a bummer. sorry. It's a bummer because I've spent very little time with Oppo proper. I have a very high fondness for the BBK brands in general, but Oppo is the one I've actually used the least. The last Oppo I spent any time with was the Find X3, and now we're at the Find X6. Wow, it's been a bit. So I love OnePlus devices. I love Vivo devices. I really like my iQOOs. Like, some great stuff coming out of BBK. So it hopefully we see some kind of conclusion to this where Oppo can kind of circle back, get back into the EU. But I would just say, if there's not a way for you to move that product, I know you'd have to go through the FCC approvals and get all that stuff, the regulatory stuff. But even if you just sold it unlocked on a website, or you went to B&H like Sony does, and you sent just a couple, like, send like 1,000. See what they do. Just get them out of your warehouse, make a little bit of money on them, and then start building up the reputation of something high-end here. I'd be all about it. JMX Warrior, I am the 41st. 41 plus. See, because he's one plus the other 40. Yeah, you get it? Yeah. It's pretty good. I'm all kinds of full of puns. Because the other sad part of Oppo's news this week, and I still haven't gotten complete confirmation that this is just Oppo, but this story is coming by way of GSM Arena, written up by Mikhail. Oppo confirmed its Shanghai-based subsidiary Zeku will be closed down due to, quote, uncertainty in the global economy and the smartphone industry. The chip design company was responsible for the development of the Mari Silicon series of chips, which included the Mari Silicon X ISP and Mari Silicon Y audio chip. Oppo established its chip-making business back in 2019 and developed in-house co-processors, ISPs, modems, power management, and audio chips. Based on speculation, Oppo invested over $1.4 billion in its chip development business. And that hurts. This is a bummer. And I don't know if this is going to similarly affect Vivo. If you've caught any of my phone camera reviews, what we can do with alternative machine learning components, AI hardware, and these dedicated co-processors is remarkable. You pick up a Vivo, my Vivo is buried under a stack of phones right there. I'd be holding it up. My Vivo X90, X80, even the back to the X70. What you can do is you can take this great chip from Qualcomm, and then you attach this little coprocessor that handles very specific duties and kind of takes load off of that main chip. And Vivo has been phenomenal at using that to augment low-light photography. And then the same hardware that processes these incredible turn night into day low light images is also responsible for driving their display. So when we talk about screen refresh and we talk about sort of like upscaling content or adding or producing HDR, Vivo uses their camera coprocessor as another way to kind of take load off of the main part of the chip. This was also a major benefit, especially last year, because of the issues with the Samsung-produced Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. If we start losing players in the chip industry that are making these very specific co-processing elements, then we lose something that can be a unique differentiating feature from phone to phone to phone. If we can only rely on exactly what's in a Snapdragon chip, then there's no pressure on Qualcomm to improve those features and those benefits. One of the reasons why we've seen Qualcomm continuously step up their ISP, their image signal processing. I don't know what the P stands for in ISP. One of the reasons why we've seen them make these improvements to their camera capabilities is because other companies will say, hey, you're not giving us what we need to make our next flagship phone. So we're going to take that. We're going to take this as a process and make our own little co-chip. Well, see, then it matters less if you use a Qualcomm processor. So the Vivo X90 has this V-series co-processor, and that handles so much of this data crunching and image manipulation and image processing. Well, the V2 will work with a Qualcomm processor or a MediaTek processor. So you don't need to stay with Qualcomm if a major aspect of the phone is photography and you've made your own custom chip to facilitate that photography. So this one is precious to me. Like, if you want a MediaTek SoC, but you don't want to give up what makes the Vivo such an incredible performer, you don't have to worry. The V2 in the X90 works really well. So that's the last confirmation on this story. I don't know if we're saying Oppo, because the Shanghai-based chip subsidiary Zeku is the company that is working under Oppo to manufacture and design these chips, these coprocessors. And I don't know if Zeku is also responsible for using the V2. So I'll be following up on that too. JMan150 and Dave Burns are both saying image signal processor. I knew that and completely, for some reason, I wanted to say image signal path, which is absolutely incorrect. So thank you for the corrections, guys. It is image signal processor. And yeah, Simon Says Hypno says the V2 chip does great night sight photos. Vivo is the top option in low light photography. If you're ever shooting in challenging or in mixed light, like say you have really high contrast situations, no one is doing that signal processing better than Vivo. That V2 is incredible, and it clears content out of its buffer shockingly fast. So if you have a Pixel, and Pixel has really good HDR performance, Pixels have great night sight features, but you stack just a couple auto HDR photos back to back to back, that phone starts shutting off your shutter. The Pixel 7 Pro quickly fills its buffer and then won't let you take any extra photos. You get like 4 or 5 chances, and then you got to wait for that phone to catch up. Versus something like a Vivo X90, where you can just keep going, pop, 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 pop. and it's not as aggressive, and it's, I don't believe it's operating at the same tier, but my Xiaomi 13 Ultra is very similar. We went down to the beach and Lex is running, and it's kind of a shady gray day. So it's not, I mean, it's trying to lift the image brightness and it's trying to lift the image HDR, the color, the light, but it's gray. It's gray at the beach. You've got like kind of gray brown sand and gray blue water and a gray blue sky. It's very dull, but the phone is trying to make this kind of image pop. And she's running. And I'm just going click, 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 click. And the phone never stops. It just keeps going. I don't believe that is a function of the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2. I believe that is a function of the processing and the buffer and the co-processing that Xiaomi likes to bake into their products too. So that's where I'm really anxious if we start losing this stuff, because the reason why our chips get better is because we're putting pressure on it. Our phones only ever get better if we get the competition. So, that's a good one. JMan150 is saying, GSM Arena have just posted an article saying that the EU are moving to ban misleading battery life ads and mandate third-party repairs. Let's see, I'm on GSM Arena right now, and it is. It's like the top story on GSM Arena. Here, let me screen share this real quick. This would be lovely. So, also written up by Mikhail. EU moves to ban misleading battery life ads and mandate third-party repairs. Nicely done, Adit. Nicely done, JMan150. Sorry, I just coughed like right into the microphone there. The European Parliament drafted new legislation with the goal of offering better product labeling in the EU and limiting misleading product characteristics, environmental claims, and repairability restrictions. Quote, "The industry will no longer profit from making consumer goods that break just as the guarantee period is over. Consumers will have to be provided with information about the options and cost of repairs in a clear manner. Product labels will inform citizens which goods are guaranteed to last longer, and producers whose goods are more durable will profit. The jungle of false environmental claims will end as only certified and substantiated ecological claims will be permitted." That sounds pretty baller to me. I'm really tired of tech greenwashing, and I hope this also extends to other things too, like especially the automobile industry. I kind of feel like now in the year of 2023, with so many tech and consumer products are really well matured, we need a better comprehensive look at the life cycle of a product. And if a company makes something and then the consumer uses it and it's destined to eventually be thrown away or end up in a landfill, or we say it's recycled, but really a couple components are pulled out, some material is salvaged, and then a lot of waste material still ends up in an unusable form, in an unusable situation. If the manufacturer can't be responsible for the end of life of that product, then I don't feel they have any business doing business anymore. To me, it's the same thing. Like, with automobiles and you burn gas. Oh, well, governments will clean up the air. We just make the cars and we profit from the entire life cycle of the vehicle until the end of that vehicle's life. And then there's an industry that tackles that. We're not responsible for it. We don't care about clean air. We don't have to field any of that. We just get to reap all of the profits of buying and maintaining a car. And then people suffer asthma and poor air quality and other respiratory issues. So that also impacts, the healthcare industry. And then governments have to figure out what to do with all of the components that can't be, recycled or reused. But we made all the money, but we're not responsible for anything. And I feel like consumer electronics kind of need to fit into that same category. If Apple makes a phone and they prevent you from getting reasonable repairs on that phone, then they really need to be responsible for the entire end-of-life process of doing away with those parts and components and pieces. Legislation like this, regulatory action like this, would be pretty great. And again, it's to prevent another company looking at Apple's business practices on inadequate battery capacity or throttling battery performance, not notifying the user if their battery performance is being throttled, you know, especially around that 2-year period where someone might be looking at shopping a new phone and, oh, gee, the software update slowed my phone down. What am I going to do? I guess I just got to buy a new phone. That to me is horrific. And Apple never faced the market correction that they should have for that. But at least moving forward, this would be a step towards correcting any future company from engaging in similar business practices. And Svetikus, absolutely. That is, again, my weekly soapboxing of seizing the means of production. Svetikus says, we privatize the gains, socialize the losses. Again, we love socialism. Libertarians and free market individuals love socialism because it cleans up all of their messes. And our tax dollars go towards cleaning up all of their messes. So yeah, that's kind of a bummer. That market situation is kind of a bummer. The EU trying to end run around it could be kind of cool. I'd appreciate that. I would enjoy that. So that's going to do us for the news block here. Like I said, all of those links and articles are going to be on somegadgetguide.com. This is normally where I do a subreddit plug. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. But reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles is a place to share content you feel deserves more attention. It's not a me subreddit or just my podcast subreddit. Actually, the thing that I do, so, you know, like, especially when you have podcasts that do a lot of news, they say, hey, go to our subreddit and share a link to, suggest a topic that we might talk about on the show. I kind of pull more of that from a private Discord than I do from the subreddit proper. But the subreddit that we've tried to create and we're kind of building, and there's a little bit of a community and there's some action there, is more... If it's a small content creator, if it's a medium-sized channel, if it's a large organization or journal or anything, if it's adjacent to tech in some way, and you feel that that piece of media, the review, the video, the article, the editorial, the podcast isn't getting enough attention, we hope to share and signal boost over on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Not going to spend a lot of time on this week's lineup because I kicked butt on this week's lineup. Number one story was the Xperia 1 Mark V video I put out. The number two story was my comparison between the Mark V and the Mark IV. The number three story is TK Bay's video on the Xperia 1 Mark V. The number four, now this is the one I want to highlight, from Gadget Goddess with 2,600 subscribers, unboxing and first impressions of the Vivo X Flip. So if you're into foldable devices, I'm not a huge fan of foldables. She's got the Vivo Flip in-house. So if you want to see what's going on with the X Flip, she's kind of the queen of foldables. If you're interested in a take on bending plastic displays, this woman has spent her own money to buy, I think, almost every single foldable that has been launched to consumers and has been sharing some really great thoughts on the pros and cons of different devices and what she likes and what she doesn't like about different things. But then the number five is my Poco F5. So I kind of ran the board on the top five this week. Rounding out the top 10, we've got Gary Explains, 7 Things You Must Know Before Buying a Graphics Card. We've got El Jefe Reviews, checking out the Soundcore A20i affordable earbuds, $30 true wireless earbuds. We've got the Alzoom 65-watt GAN USB-C travel charger from Tech Travel Geeks. We've got Moto G Power Night Mode video, 1080p at 60 frames per second video sample from Mobile Geezer. And then wrapping up the top 10, this was a really fun video from Stetson Doggett. Are Mint Mobile's new plans worth it in 2023? And so he's looking at... my main SIM card now is on Mint. I pay for the year. That's my main phone line. It's easy. It's really cheap. I don't really care about all the other bells and whistles. This podcast, not brought to you by Mint Mobile, but if you go to the support page on some gadget guy, you can get a bonus to sign up for Mint service. Not only is he just looking at the prices for Mint's new plans, he does an incredible breakdown on not just what it costs to sign up for service, but other low-cost carriers, like other prepaid, and then how that stacks up against other postpaid. And I think this is the best math that I've seen comparing prepaid, postpaid per number of lines. Because there's a point where if you have one line or two lines, prepaid makes all the sense. That's why Marie and I are on Mint. We have two personal phone lines. There is no way to beat Mint's pricing for two lines on any postpaid carrier. But if we had more of a family plan going, like four lines or five lines, prepaid maybe stops making sense. And then that's when other carriers are throwing in additional perks like streaming services or music services or cloud storage services, and all of that adds up. And the deal gets way better. This is one of the best videos I've ever seen at kind of collecting all of that data and showing you, like, oh, if you have two lines, this you might want to check it out. If you have five lines, the math is totally different. So, Septian, hey, I know her. And Kappa Cash is saying, yay, GG, gadget goddess. And she streams a weekly tech podcast on Tuesdays. So she's not, trying to step on my Monday streams at all. So she's very considerate like that. Everyone's saying, just call her Folderella. She is the foldable queen. She legit is. I have to point people to her channel. Like, I've got the duos. I like dual display. I've got my LG V50 and my LG V60 is behind me. I like two glass panels, and I prefer that. I've played with a bunch of foldables. I don't know what it is about using a plastic screen on a device that it just doesn't feel right to me, and I'm worried about the durability, and it's just not my bag. And increasingly, like, what I'd love is for more traditional candy bar phones just to have good desktop modes. And then it wouldn't matter if I had a folding tablet, because then I could plug into a TV or plug into a portable monitor or do any of these other things, and it would still be the same compute power. But for those people who want the expanded sort of square format screen experience, then foldables make a ton of sense. Joe Hickey from Purposely Pixel, he's got a little, oh, the duo, and a little heart right there. So, short story, incredibly long. We have a subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Check it out. Share content. Please click the upvote arrows. Again, I've got like 50 something concurrent people watching my various streams right now. If half of you went and upvoted some articles, then you would immediately be feeding Reddit's algorithm for sorting content, and all of those content creators would get a little bit of a boost. Maybe their content would get used on other websites and other subreddits, and then it would expand their audience, and then that would be a huge benefit for them picking up some more viewers.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, what's going on, Juan, and all of you tuned in to today's show. I'm Nick Gray from Fandroid. I've known Juan for quite a few years now, and you may have actually heard my voice from back in the day when Juan used to host the Pocket Now Weekly. If you're not familiar with Fandroid, we were actually the very first Android news site to hit the web, publishing our very first article within hours of Google making their announcement about their mobile operating system. Of course, a lot has changed since then, but we're still here covering the news, reviewing new gadgets, and of course, sharing our passion for Android with anyone who wants to join in. You can find all of our work on Fandroid.com. That's Phandroid.com. But if you love video, and I'm sure you do since you're listening to Juan's podcast, be sure to check us out at youtube.com/Fandroid as well. And that's going to do it. Juan, thanks for featuring us. Back to you.
Getting into the gadget block, I wanted to just highlight this one article here from Amir Siddiqui, and I have mispronounced your name, and I apologize. This is from Android Authority. Earbuds are a reoccurring cost that you're not prepared for. And so the folks at Android Authority are trying to kind of crunch the math on true wireless earbuds and some of the issues that people or consumers generally don't take into account. And they make some really solid points. I obviously am a fan of cabled audio and premium earbuds, premium headsets. And I feel like, again, some really good analysis in this article about you buy a pair of true wireless earbuds. They're really fun. They're really handy. You have all the convenience of not having a cable tethering you to your phone. But to not have that cable means you have to walk around with a case and you have to charge the case and the earbuds. And if the earbuds aren't charged, then you can't listen or you can't plug them in directly. And then after a couple years, the tiny little batteries in these are starting to degrade and none of these are really decently repairable. So not only do you have to throw away two little earbuds with drivers and plastic casing and batteries and magnets, you also have to throw away the case. There's like nothing redeemable or recyclable or reusable about earbuds. So to kind of contribute to that, I just wanted to show, this is one of my guilty pleasures. I have some really stupid expensive earbuds on my desk right now. Actually, let me show those first. I promise you we will get, this is kind of my segue, because my Sony phones still have headphone jacks. So basically I'm better than you if you don't have a headphone jack still, is what I'm trying to highlight here. It's really not about tech. It's just about stroking my own ego. That was so dumb. So like, for example, I've got these. These are my Odysseys. So these are planar magnetic earbuds. These are kind of pricey, over $1,000 earbuds. Then I've also been a really big fan of I've been a really big fan of Periodic Audio. I did not sleep well last night, and my sore throat kept me up, and I am real foggy. But these are the new Periodic Audios that also have detachable cables for the earbuds. So these are a really, really good sound, especially if you like your earbuds to be a little bit more on the bullet side, so they're a little bit smaller casings. And then also on my desk here, I've got my Mi Audio Pinnacles. And these, they're fun. They're a brighter sound, but I feel like they're a little closer to some of my other this cable. So this is the argument against cabled audio, right? That you get them all knotted up, but I'll still take it. But these are the Mi Audio Pinnacles, and again, just a really well crafted and unique tuning, a unique sound to this type of earbud where. I will use these. I will stray into using these for more like mixing or monitoring. So like professional use. For critical listening, I've kind of got a handle on their sound and I will use them for that. All of these earbuds have detachable cables. You can pop the driver off, replace the cable, pop it back on, and then you've got your earbuds are ready to go again. But always on my desk, always, My favorite pair of slumming it earbuds, and they're not great. They're kind of muddy. The bassy is kind of fat, dull. But I got them at a time where we were getting these really inexpensive kind of garbage earbuds in our phone cases. And it was a huge deal when Samsung partnered with AKG. And especially for like, what was it, Galaxy S8 or S9, we started getting those AKG-tuned Samsung earbuds. Those were really good earbuds to include in the box. But around that time, I started getting more into the Chi-Fi revolution for Chinese hi-fi audio systems. And these are my KZ-ES4. Totally spaced the name of these earbuds. I've had these since the beginning of 2018. So these are the KZ-ES4 dual driver, a little dull, a little muddy, but compared to the free earbuds or AirPods or anything you get like that, this is a really fun, punchy, bassy sound. These earbuds retailed for, you could find them on sale for less than $20. I got these the beginning of 2018. I have replaced the cable once, and I think that cost me $5 to get a new cable. So for, let's round up, let's say for $30, I have had 4 years of fun travel audio. I don't care about mashing up this cable, winding it really tight, throwing it in a back pocket, you know, just dumping it in my my backpack or laptop bag. These things have been mashed and abused because they're just inexpensive. But I haven't really replaced the ES4. I've only replaced one cable that started to detach from the microphone on the inline mic. There is no $30 Bluetooth earbud that is going to last 4 years with the same kind of aggressive abuse that I have put my ES4 through in that same way. And that's what kills me. We lose the headphone jack. So now if I want to use my ES4 with another device, or do I have one? Oh, I've got my OnePlus dongle over here. I have to pack this, and this puts extra pressure on my USB-C port on my phone. This is not as good. This is not as good as having the jack built into my phone. Oh, but it takes up too much space. And you're like, yeah, there are almost no phones that are thinner than an Xperia 1 series phone. And it still has the headphone jack. It still has front-facing stereo speakers. It still has a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. It still has a removable tray for SIM card and for SD. We have not gotten anything for removing the space on our phones. Oh, but you needed to take out the headphone jack so you could get a better haptic motor. BS. That is bad phone design. They removed the headphone jack only to force you and encourage you to buy Bluetooth audio because that was a better profit add-on for them. So this article from Android Authority, great. Please check it out. I agree with a lot of the sentiment in this article, but it's also that thing, like, we talk about Bluetooth audio because it's fun and it's convenient in not being directly tethered, but it comes with other issues and other costs that we don't consider, I think, as directly at the time of purchase. Like I was saying with like cars and phone manufacturing, I love my JBLs, I love my Neuras, the OnePlus Buds Pro 2 were awesome. The new Pixel Buds are really, really solid. All of these things are great. They're fun. Good noise canceling, some fun spatial audio features. It's all fun. But none of these companies are really detailing what the end of life for this product looks like. And you look at Apple, and they've delivered AirPods at scale, and we're talking about tons of e-waste. Oh, but it's just like a little pair of earbuds multiplied by the hundreds of millions of earbuds that people will buy roughly every 2 years of constant use, and we end up with tons of e-waste because there is nothing to properly recycle on here. It's not like you can refurb AirPods. Also, that's kind of gross. Don't buy used earbuds, I guess. So, yeah, kind of a big deal. I just like showing those off. These KZ ES4, this is like the best $20 I've ever spent. And I do, like every single audio component review. Like right now, I've got the Phio BTR7. It's a little Bluetooth DAC. That's in my bedroom because I will listen on really nice earbuds when I'm just kind of getting relaxed or trying to kind of calm down, get ready for bed. But here in the office, I have the iFi. This is the iFi Griffin. It's a really monster Bluetooth DAC. I am not using this thing to its full capabilities, like inputs and outputs, and you can use it as a DAC or use it as an amp or use it as both or use it cabled or use it with Bluetooth. And this thing is just gorgeous. It is just a monster audio device. And one of the first earbuds that I paired with it, KZ ES4. $25 worth of earbud was one of the first things I plugged into this because I've come to understand that KZ sound so well that then I listen on the ES4 and I'll move over to like Periodic Audio or my Odyssey or any of the other new, the Ecos have been really great too. Like the Eco Gems and the OH10, all of those earbuds have been phenomenal. But when I go from the ES4 and I plug in some new earbuds, oh, now I hear what those differences are, but I still really like the ES4 sound. It's my fun cotton candy audio approach. Here's my BTR-7. So I have my BTR-7. I've got my Razer dongle. I use this as a backup for all those phones that don't have good audio processing. And then I've got just like a couple passive pass-through dongles. So this is, this is my other Razer dongle. I was looking for this. So both of my Razer dongles are in the same travel bag, and that's not a good strategy. I shouldn't do that. So anyway, treat your ears. Your ears are worth it. And, get them something nice. Spend a little money on them. But if you have the means to pick up a USB dongle and some Chi-Fi, something around $50 is going to rock your socks. I mean, not even those ES4. Again, that is like the least expensive starter earbud just to kind of try something that's a little different. But, yeah, KZ, CCA, Eco, Moondrop... I'm missing a bunch in that really like kind of sub $100 low cost, and anything under $100. I mean, as you get close to $100, like the drivers, the tuning, the crinicles, like all those things just get real good. But they're fun. They're fun, and they don't hurt your wallet very much to have that fun. So anyway, check out the article. I liked their write-up over at Android Authority. So it's 10:13 in the AM. I'd kind of like to just open this up. I'm going to start with the request here on the Instagram. I have the Sony Xperia 1 Mark V. I do not have a Pro I in-house, so I don't know how well the Pro I has aged with software updates. But I have been looking back at some of my old Xperia photo samples. The Pro I photo and video samples, and I'm very impressed with where the Xperia 5 has evolved over the Pro I. So immediately, and what I point to in my videos, I actually show in the 1 Mark IV versus 1 Mark V video some of that thermal performance in action. Because our big fear was, oh no, the Xperia 1 Mark IV get thermal and it overheats and you get warning. It warns you that it's running warm. Why would you ever want that? Don't you want your phone to just randomly shut off and not tell you that it's running too hot to keep doing what you want it to do? It gave me a thermal warning, and I was just shooting video with the 5G radios on and the screen brightness set to maximum on a hot day. Who would want that? I really love how like the Sony hater community in the Android review space is always like, oh, but it did this thing. So wait, it told you what was going to happen? Yeah, that's bad. It's so dumb. So back to the actual phone and me not complaining about people not reviewing the phone. What we have here on the Xperia 1 Mark V is like the love child of the 1 Mark IV, the Pro I, and then using a better chip. So the main image sensor on the Mark V is very close to the usable surface area of the camera sensor on the Pro I. This was a frustration for all of us. Sony marketed the Pro I as having a 1-inch sensor. The Pro I had a 1-inch sensor, but you didn't use the whole sensor. And what you used was closer to the sensor size of like a Galaxy Note Ultra, Pixel 6 and Pixel 7, the new main camera sensor on the iPhone 14 Pro Max. Actually, no, I think the iPhone 14 Pro also has that 1/1.28-inch type sensor, but it's roughly a 1/1.3-something. So this is a 1/1.35-inch type sensor. When it comes to the depth of field, the photographic aesthetic, the Mark V is very similar to the Pro I when the Pro I is is using its wide open aperture at f2. This is like f1.85 something, 1.9, somewhere in that ballpark. That's pretty close. You're not going to see substantial differences in depth of field blur or in how your subject is kind of highlighted or isolated in the shot. But I do agree with Sony's claims that this new sensor technology is soaking up and processing light better. So the way that this handles low light situations, the way that this processes HDR content, the new software night mode scrubs out so much more noise. It's not Vivo style night into day. It is about arriving at less grain and noise in an HDR processing situation for HDR style night mode photography. Lots of extra words there just to describe this stuff. So when you compare it against the Pro I, the main advantage of the Pro I is the variable aperture. So you can stop it down to f4, you can open it up to f2. The One Mark V does not have that variable aperture, but basically everything else is better. The companion sensors are better. The telephoto is definitely better. The wide angle is pretty similar. The low light capabilities, the processing capabilities, the function, all of the photography aspects of the Mark V, better than the Pro I. So that's what's kind of exciting, where the Xperia Pro I was a really expensive phone. It launched at like $1,800. It was in that ballpark. That this phone is launching at $1,400 matches most of the functionality of the Pro I and bests it in a number of data processing and light processing situations is really exciting. So the Mark V is again, I love my 1-inch sensor camera phones, and I think, oh no, I might have left it downstairs. My Xiaomi 13 Ultra is not in the office right now. Dang it. I was going to hold both up as props. So I'll hold up my Xiaomi 12S Ultra as my example of a 1-inch camera sensor phone. I love these sensors and all of these companion sensors, and the Xiaomi 13 Ultra is another step in that same direction. For photography, I'm really enjoying that sensor size advantage because of the aesthetic of how you produce those photos. But nothing autofocuses like a Sony. Nothing locks on the eyeball of your subject at a distance like a Sony. Video content creation, slow motion video, sports action photography. Like if you're running after a kid, like say you're running at my daughter's 7, she's a little Tasmanian devil of an adventure princess, and nothing tracks and locks on to that kid in action like a Sony. So then you compare that against some other phones out there where, like, you know, the cameras on a Note 23 are very good. I can't get the moments I want from a Samsung, even for their improvements to things like shutter lag, like I can from a Sony. When I hit the shutter, and it's the 2-stage shutter, so I know I'm autofocusing and it's tracking her movement and it's following her and it's got some of the most precise subject tracking that I've ever seen. I know when I hit that shutter and I fully depress it, I am getting the exact instant that the electricity has triggered the button on that phone. And Samsung can't get that done. Apple takes way too long in kind of like pre-processing an HDR image that wrecks the dynamic range and destroys the fine detail on their sensors. I really do not like Apple's HDR processing. I really do not like that Samsung has been copying Apple's, you know, brightness lifting, but then noise reduction, then over sharpening, splotchy image processing. I don't like how those final images pop out on a Samsung. And then I pick up a Sony, and yeah, the colors are not as vibrant. Sony does not play that game. They are not trying to impress you with ridiculously oversaturated greens in wide open landscape shots that don't really exist and end up turning lime yellow. Like, that is not the game they're playing. But when my daughter is leaping from a platform on a jungle gym to grab monkey bars and go swinging through the air, I am capturing that with it focusing on her eyeball at 4K video at 120 frames per second that then I can turn into like the most dramatic action hero slow motion video that you've ever seen at four times the resolution of most other phones' slow motion video. And people are like, well, but I mean, you can take that 1080p slow motion and put it into DaVinci Resolve and slow it down and upscale it. And you're like, yeah, I can do the same thing. I can even cut that footage frame rate in half and do Optiflow and get not 1/4 speed, but 1/8 speed of her going and reaching for the monkey bars. Like, it's the same issue. So, yeah, Xperia 1 Mark V has been rocking my socks. Pretty great. Pretty great. Septian. Juan's talking about bad Apple photo processing. You're going on the blacklist, sir. Apple is the best at everything. I want to shout out, I can't remember the name of the article, but my buddy, Shaka Armstrong, for iMore, did a comparison between the Pixel 7, I think the Pixel 7 Pro and the iPhone 14 Pro. And I want to say it was called Skinclusivity. I didn't keep the photo samples, and I might need to ask him if he still has them. But if you're in indoor lighting, if you're in under night lighting, like city lamps at night, the iPhone is awful. It is so bad. So you take your photo and it does this washed out lift to colors and highlights. It gets every skin tone wrong, even pale skinned individuals like myself. But in the samples that he hired models and he shot them back and forth, and every single time the Pixel would nail the image, the color of the person's skin, but there was so much more detail in the texture of skin, in the texture of hair. The HDR processing wasn't just washing out the image to artificially lift highlights and then scale back on noise reduction for the higher ISO and then over sharpen that. So you get this paint dab splotchiness in iPhone photos. You can still kind of see it in bright daylight. It's still there, but it's really aggressively bad in low light situations, and the Pixel just murks it. The differences in skin tone, the differences in hair color, the differences in hair texture. He did these shots side by side, Pixel 7 Pro, iPhone 14 Pro, and every single time the iPhone 14 Pro got it wrong, got it flat, and spat out this awful image processing. It's like they haven't really changed their image processing software since they were using smaller sensors. And they absolutely do not need to be ratcheting photos like this with a sensor as good as they're using. I want to say it was Skinclusivity. Someone's going to have to look it up. But if you search for iMore and Shaka Armstrong, he did a great side-by-side comparison. And I'm going to have to talk to him again just like to see, like later on, like has this situation changed? What do you think about image processing? Have you tried any of these mega camera sensor phones like Xiaomi's? Because like it's so refreshing when you pick up a phone, you take a photo, and it gets the person right. My skin is a mess. I have psoriasis. I have issues with eczema. I have lots of scarring. My people are sort of like a kind of a light brown, but lots of kind of like yellows underneath in our skin color. But then I have lots of red in my cheeks. And it's maybe not always the most flattering when it gets it perfectly accurate, but they're like, that's me. That's what I look like. I don't want to look at that photo 20 years from now and see a face that's not mine. And unfortunately, if I shoot indoors or at night on an iPhone, that's not me. It's someone that is very me adjacent, but it's not me. So, Sveticus, didn't Marques Brownlee do a blind picture poll on Twitter between a bunch of phones and the Pixel 6a won in the end? Yes, the Pixel 6a took the top spot, even though it uses that miserable 60 hertz display. So I don't even understand how anyone could look at a photo if it has a 60 hertz screen. Because if you're looking at a static image on your phone and it's only going at 60 hertz, that's kind of the worst. Sorry, I couldn't help that. The issue that I have with a lot of those blind taste tests, those blind comparisons, are they're shooting really simple and basic photos, right? like, there wasn't anything challenging. There wasn't anything focusing on composition. There wasn't anything that really tested the phone cameras. So when you design a test for the most basic point-and-shoot average consumer, we shouldn't be surprised that a good mid-ranger phone will win. So I kind of feel like those comparisons and those tests do a disservice to the more expensive phones, because you're not showing us what an expensive phone can do over a mid-ranger. You're showing us the lowest common denominator, the most insulting interpretation of an average consumer, and you're playing to those photography strengths. Someone just sitting in an office doing like a casual like three-quarter body shot, and any phone is going to do that well. I've got like, I have like some Infinix on the shelf behind me, like $200 phones, full MSRP, that you would get for free. They would give you money to take an Infinix to sign up for a carrier contract. Those phones will crush those exact same photo situations, because that's really all you need if your use is that low level, point and shoot, basic. But you'll never get a sense of what an iPhone can do in more capable hands. You'll never get a sense of what a Samsung can do from someone who understands the Pro mode. You'll never get a sense of how revolutionary these one-inch camera sensors have been on Vivos and Xiaomis and Oppos. You're always going to be stuck in this like bottom pit of take phone out of pocket, push circle, get photo. And that's the shame. If that's how you shoot, do not buy more than a Pixel 6a, because you won't get any benefit for it. But if you do take phone out of pocket, tap to focus on someone's face, angle to adjust so you have less distractions in your background, and then push shutter button, immediately you are composing a photo with more consideration than tech reviewers ever give their audience. Now you are a photographer, not just posting something on social media. That's literally just how fine a difference we're talking. And as soon as you consider your framing, the angle of your photos, the background of your photos, and you are telling the camera to focus on something specifically, now you will see the benefit of stepping up to a more expensive camera system. And you can't highlight that in a test of just basic comparisons like that. It doesn't really work for what they're trying to accomplish. And I think it misrepresents all of the incredible improvements that we've seen for smartphone cameras. I think it misrepresents why I'm so excited by the Sony. I'm not excited about the Sony because I can take it out of my pocket and push the shutter button and get a selfie. I'm excited about the Xperia 1 Mark 5 because I can take it out of my pocket, push that button, hold the autofocus for incredible autofocus tracking as my daughter is tearing through a jungle gym, and I'm nailing every shot at every part of it as she's like running around like crazy. Can't do that on a Pixel 6a. Boy howdy does that not work on a Pixel 6a. It really does not work on a Galaxy Note Ultra, and it's trickier to do on an iPhone 14. So that's why I'm excited. But side by side, you'd never see that in the photos. In fact, side by side, you'd probably be less impressed by the photos straight out of the camera because they're not as HDR in the colors. And that's the tragic omission that we see from stuff like this. Sore Hunter, brightest image equals 99% of the winner in these comparisons. Because don't forget, like I want to say it was 2 years before the Pixel 6a won. I want to say the BlackBerry Key 2 was one of the top contenders in another previous showdown. And I was telling people, the cameras on the BlackBerry Key 2 were way better than anyone was really giving them credit for. The BlackBerry Key, I've got photos from the BlackBerry Key 2 that to me are keepsakes, like a moment of my daughter and my wife at the LA Zoo. And I just catch that one moment, and it was brilliant. Those cameras were solid. Was it my favoriteest camera phone of the year? No. Was it well beyond perfectly functional? Yeah. And wouldn't you know it, in those kind of point and shooty situations, it did really well. It hung to, I want to say it was like to the semifinals. It was like in the round of eight before they finally voted it out. It was besting Huawei's and other really expensive camera focused phones. So yeah, sorry. Let me kind of catch up on some of the chat here. Let's see. from Gornlord, but Juan, the camera UI is so complicated, and I refuse to learn it. Now let me show you how I shoot my videos on a Sony Alpha A7S III. But how do you even say Suspiria 1 IV Mark 3? It's so confuzzling. I don't know how my hands work. See, Sore Hunter, yes, that's kind of, yes, absolutely. At least it can be said that it is for average consumers. Mid-rangers are where average consumers are spending their money. Overwhelmingly, under $500. That is the average, peak of the bell curve. Anyone who holds up a $1,000 plus phone and goes, but what about the average consumers who don't know anything and they're idiots? What are they going to get from a phone like this? That consumer doesn't exist, at least not at any scale. Even in Samsung land, that is less than 10% of Samsung's market. So I seriously doubt, I fundamentally doubt that this is how we should be framing our reviews. We should not be reviewing to the mythical average consumer who's an idiot and can't do anything on their phones when less than 10% of Samsung's market are buying premium tier phones. I have to believe anyone spending more than $500, especially in this economy, is doing so with some consideration or purpose, except for iPhone users. iPhone users are buying to be a part of the ecosystem. And for some reason, that's still a fashion flex. And I can't make videos for that. You know, it's just how that goes. I don't review purses. I'm not a fashionista. I don't care about labels. I care about manufacturers' claims and who is really accomplishing that kind of strategy. Yep, Sammy A54 and A34, average phones. The A54 looks like a solid buy this year. It looks a lot stronger than the A53 was. I mean, yes and no. It's just, I kind of get the strategy. Farhan says, I'm glad to see no large popular YouTube channels got their hands on Sony phones. Sony is doing God's work. It's the bummer because you get a bunch of them together and they're like, oh, this phone is so underrated. And you're like, well, isn't it your job to rate phones? They did that to LG, right? Remember? Like, oh, I don't understand. These LG phones are so good. Why are they so underrated? It's because when you reviewed them at launch, you said that they were terrible and that no one should buy them and that they were masters of none. Oh, it's so sad that LG's out on the market now. No, I don't believe you. From Miller, 325 on the Instagrams. I'm really appreciating the fact that Sony fixed the problems most tech reviewers complained about with the 5. I think you mean the 5 Mark IV? Oh, with the Mark 5. So, again, everyone's complaining about Sony. Oh, Sony phones overheat and they run hot and overheating and oh, those thermals. This is why tech reviewers suck. Because there's no nuance for how these companies make different products. When you handle a Samsung or when you handle like a phone like a OnePlus, those are heavily managed devices. It doesn't matter what you tell the phone to do. The phone is going to throttle app performance or manage app performance for you. Even when you tell it like, hey, I really want you to do, you know, like high performance mode. Kinda. You do see the bump and the phone will run a little warmer. But it's still kind of putting brackets around what you can and can't do. like high performance mode on a OnePlus, and most games are still only going to play at 60 frames per second. Where I've got phones that are older that have real high performance modes and will play like 90 and 100 frames per second in a game like Dead Cells or Undead Horde. I've got a gaming phone on my desk right now, the last year's Red Magic. This phone runs hot, but if you tell it, run the screen at 120 FPS in Dead Cells, it will do it. It will do it until the phone is uncomfortable to hold, but it will do what you told it to do. And Samsung's will not do that. And OnePlus's will not do that. So a Sony and Motorola are more like gaming phones. If you tell a Moto, run hot, it's going to run hot. If you tell a Sony, do a bunch of work, it's going to do a bunch of work. And 4K at 120 frames per second video is a ton of work to put on a camera that is attached to a computer that has wireless cell phone radios and a bright screen with a battery of limited capacity that starts running hot when you're taxing it that aggressively. So the thing that is very frustrating is never getting that part of the conversation. I am a grown-up, and if I tell my computer, complete the task as aggressively fast as you can, I want it to do that. I'm going to pull a little Ron Swanson here. I want you to run as fast as you can, no matter how hot you get. I'm worried that you just heard me say, run a little bit faster. That's not what I said. I said, run as fast as you can, no matter how hot you get. If I tell that to a OnePlus or if I tell that to a Samsung, I'm not going to get that. I'm not going to get all the bacon and eggs that they've got. I'm just going to get a lot of bacon and eggs. If I tell that to a Moto or I tell it to a Sony, those phones will run screaming hot until either the completion of the task or until they literally cannot sustain that level of performance anymore. And that's what I want. I don't want the phone to hold my hand and tell me what I think I want. I want the phone to do what I told it to do. DTNL, Juan Swanson. I love it. Oh, man. Yeah, Joe Hickey, 4K at 120 is so much work, no one else wants to attempt it. There are almost no consumer-grade mirrorless cameras that shoot 4K 120. And out of all of our phones, we've got slow motion. It won't save in real time, but it will save 4K slow motion video on the Xperia 1 Mark II. We have real-time 4K 120 on the Xperia 1 Mark III. We have main camera sensor 4K 120 on the OnePlus 9 Pro and the OnePlus 10 Pro. And then we have matched 4K 120 on all three camera sensors on the ZTE Axon 40 Ultra. And that's it. I don't believe anyone else is trying to do 4K 120. And the company who does it the best is Sony. As Sony has got 4K 120 with all the other bells and whistles, and you have control over it and manual mode it, you can do everything. It is 4K 120 just like any other aspect of the camera or the phone. It is not a limited or a gimped high-speed slow-motion mode. It is just baked into the settings that you can enable in the main camera apps. So there's nothing about a Sony that's average consumer. Like, you get it because it is the most aggressive production performance platform that Sony can assemble. So what's kind of cool is now Sony is benefiting from a much better chip, not made by Samsung, made by TSMC. And because of their own internal manufacturing issues with the 8 Gen 1, they've changed some of the layout and they've added a little bit better internal thermal hardware to manage the performance on the phone. So the phone does a better job of getting heat away from the components that run hot. So it's kind of a performance double whammy. I really didn't have issues with the One Mark IV, but I had to use it in a very different way than I used other phones. Using the One Mark V, I have so much more room to play. But I'm also not doing a ton of stupid video in 4K 120. 4K 120 means that I'm probably going to slow it down to 4K 30, which means all of my footage is 4:1. So if I shoot an hour of footage, I have 4 hours of slow motion video to scrub through when I want to make kind of like a family mashup video. Hey, we went to the zoo and I shot all this cool stuff. Every second of footage in real time that I shoot is 4 seconds of footage that I've got to edit and organize. So it's just such a heady challenge. It really is kind of incredible to see what these phones are capable of. But it's so frustrating when you're like, that conversation is locked up in this, like, but you just want to cover the basics. Why would you want to cover the basics on a $1,400 phone? It just doesn't make any other sense. That's a complicated question that I can't really fully answer because I haven't spent a lot of time with them. Juan, are there any differences between ZTE flagships and Nubia flagships? I've seen the latest Nubia Z5. It looks really good. I don't know. The only Nubias that I really spend time with are the Red Magics. I have not spent any other time with the Nubia label on other phones. Like the Z5, it looks like a great phone. I have no idea practically what those differences would look like. Sorry, excuse me. And Chris Lopez, I think I answered that. The Axon 40 Ultra does do 4K 120. It's one of the only other phones that tries to match 4K 120 on all of those rear sensors. Gormlord, all of that footage must fill up your phone fast, though. Well, isn't that handy that we've got a phone that comes with 256 gig of built-in storage and has an easily accessible and swappable memory card? So I can just pop out the SIM card tray and put in a 512 gig card. And then when the phone is starting to fill up, I can offload that footage to the memory card and edit still on the phone. So you never feel it. And look up pricing on a 1 terabyte SD card and then compare pricing to like getting 512 gig built into a phone, and your storage issues are not a problem. Because this was always an awesomely practical feature to have on a phone. We never should have gotten rid of it. And the only reason why it made sense for manufacturers to get rid of micro SD card support wasn't to give you better haptic motors. It was to force you to spend more to upgrade the internal built-in storage. Think about how long iPhones went with like 64 gig of base model storage, and now they can shoot 4K video. Boy, that must fill up your storage pretty quick. So that's the problem that we ran into. Hold on, I want to see if I still have it. I might have deleted it because I did one of these tests where I ran this for 36 minutes of 4K 120. And I don't know if I kept the sample. I think I might have just deleted the sample because it was a really silly large file. Let me scroll down a little bit further. Yeah, I think I already dumped it. Unless it's still taking up space. Let me scroll a little far. Oh, and I still have all my photo tests and stuff too. So let's see. There's my night mode samples. This is awesome podcasting, by the way. I'm real good at doing the podcasting. I don't think I have any longer clips. So I've got 31 seconds. Let's see what this. At around 30 seconds. 30 seconds of 4K 120 is 8.3. How big is it? It's not telling me how large the file size is. Hold on. Let me go into my File Explorer app. 2 seconds. I know where the file is now. Do that and do that. Okay. 30 seconds of 4K 120 is 540 meg. So roughly a gig a minute. 4K 120 is processing a gigabyte of data every minute. So that's a lot. It's gonna hit your storage pretty hard. But that's why you want it on a phone that is going to let you add more storage. that's why it makes sense to add all of these camera features to phones that have memory card support. A gig a minute, that's kind of a lot.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
DTNL, anyone using a Sony to just cover the basics is flat out just wrong. So, you know, I've been talking about my uncle on this podcast. He has a Galaxy S9, and his Galaxy S9 broke in last year, and he replaced it with another Galaxy S9. So he's finally looking at upgrading away from the Galaxy S9. Like, his S9 is now really long in the tooth. He wants to get a new phone. He just texted me about a Sony. So we'll see. He might go Xperia 1, because he saw my video and he saw how excited I was about the Xperia 1. But I might tell him if he can wait, let's just wait and see if we get some kind of an announcement on the Xperia 5, because it's a little closer to the size of his Galaxy S9. It's not an S9 Plus or anything like that. It's just the smaller Galaxy S9. But even though that's a really expensive phone, he would not be doing a lot of heavy lifting computing on it. He doesn't really live out of the cameras on his phone, but he won't give up a headphone jack, and he doesn't want to give up a memory card slot. So there's nothing left. There is nothing left for him to buy. Let's see. That's also what we might end up doing for Marie. Marie, we might be spending money to replace her Pixel 4a 5G with an Xperia 5. I'm so excited. It's like, I kind of got some of my family on the Pixel train, and they loved having like the Pixel 4a and the Pixel 5a. Those phones had headphone jacks, great battery life. They were solid performers. And now it's like, oh, but I still want a headphone jack, or oh, I still want this feature. How come I can't add a memory card anymore? And it's like, oh, only one left is Sony. That's it. Gotta vote with your wallet, I guess. Oh, the Reaper Black is saying the V50. I have no idea what's going on with ZTE Axon right now. I'm hoping I'll get to play with one at some point, but I don't know that they'll be keeping 4K 120 if they do the same cost cutting that OnePlus did. Because the OnePlus 10 Pro can shoot 4K 120, but the OnePlus 11 taps out at 4K 60. From I Love Barb, will focus peaking be on the Xperia 1 Mark IV in a future update? I don't believe so. This is the thing about Sony, is they become products of their generation. And I mean this natively. So I don't know, and I don't believe that there is going to be a massive camera update for the Xperia 1 Mark IV to catch up the features on the 1 Mark V. So things like having focus peaking on the 1 Mark V, that is such a huge add. The new monitor settings, like you can use this as an external monitor for another camera. All of those updates have been great. I don't know that they're going to come natively to the 1 Mark IV. This is where you really want to follow the more diehard Sony community, though, because sometimes those new apps can be ported. The new Photo Pro and the new external monitor apps can be ported from the 1 Mark V to run on the 1 Mark IV. Not always with perfect stability, not always with the same stability as what they natively do on their own phones, but sometimes you can bring those features over. I don't think Sony's going to do it natively, though. I think they're going to say, hey, this is a feature of the One Mark V. Moving forward, we would expect other Xperias to have this, but Sony doesn't grandfather a lot of stuff like that. They're a little like Apple in that regard. You get software updates, you get bug fixes, you only get kind of like 3 years of security patching, but new features stay on the phone that you bought. And then new features on the next phone don't usually come back. From Random Hobby, hold on 1 second. I've got to just clear that I've been like muting and stuff, and we got to start wrapping this up here in about 10 minutes, but I want to get through these last couple comments here. All right. Random Hobby, what's your prediction for the Xperia 5 and 10 now that you have the One Mark 5? What SoC would they get, and when do you think we will get them? No idea on the Xperia 10. Like I said, I have almost no experience with the Xperia 10 series. They don't ship them at all to the United States. You've got to import them. I'm hoping that we'd see an Xperia 10 with something like a Snapdragon 778. You know, you need something that's going to be lower cost, but still, hopefully it's a performance improvement over the 600 series that have been in the Xperia 10s before. The Xperia 5 is tricky because there are a couple different things they could do. So the Xperia 5 Mark III had the variable telephoto. The Xperia 5 Mark IV lost the variable telephoto, but got the entirely new redesign so that the frame was similar to the Xperia 1. The flatter sides, the whole new layout for the phone. Genuinely, if the Xperia 5 just got the thermal pads and the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, and everything else on that phone was exactly the same as the Mark IV, I'd be happy. That is still a phone that can go toe-to-toe well with a Galaxy S23, and it's a little bit more expensive, but then you also get features like memory cards and headphone jacks. That would be fine. If they do improve the cameras, there are actually two things that they could do. They could go with the larger main sensor, but then keep the shorter telephoto, the non-variable, or they could keep the older main camera sensor and go to the variable telephoto again, like they had on the One Mark III. Either of those would be an improvement over the 5 Mark IV. So I don't know what direction they'll go. You keep the Xperia 5 almost exactly the same as it is, and then just change a couple of those camera features, but you get the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2. That's a monster upgrade for the Xperia 5. Either way, it's a great pivot back to the Mark III, or it's an improvement that matches some of the new capabilities of the Mark 1, of the Xperia 1 Mark 5. Sorry, 1s and 5s and marks and things. And especially this year is confusing for me because we've got to say Xperia 5 Mark 5. So I'll be really anxious to see what they announce and what they show, because the Xperia 5 is going to be a monster small little phone. I mean, it's just going to be a champ. But there are a couple different ways that they could arrive at changing the Xperia 5. Septian is saying, now that I think about it, Sony has always had SD card support. I don't think they've ever lost. They took away the headphone jack on the Xperia 1 Mark 1, and that was dumb. So they brought it back on the Xperia 1 Mark 2. I have my 1 Mark 1 in the bookshelf. I almost never pull it out. Just it's kind of a museum phone, just because I love it. But I have my Xperia 1 Mark II. This is still a champ of a phone. It's Snapdragon 865, headphone jack, memory card slot. It's a fantastic pocket computer and camera. I mean, what I actually should do is put Marie's SIM card in that. It only gets LTE here, but I'd want to see if she liked that. I might have to talk to her about just taking that for a test drive. From Michael Castilla, any comments about the Xperia 1 Mark 5 in Europe being published as 1,499 euro? I don't know. Was the Xperia 1 Mark 4 sold? Was it sold? Like, again, it's never fair to European consumers when it's like the same amount in euro as it would be in dollars. But was the Xperia Was the Xperia 1 Mark IV sold at $15.99 for Euro? Because, again, that's not fair. That means it's cheaper in the United States. But, again, I would be looking at what markets do they think the phone will sell in, how much it costs to ship to those areas, what other kinds of regulatory hoops you might have to jump through, and then also it's still a cost savings going from the Mark IV to the Mark V. But, yeah, it's going to be pricey. Sony's are always expensive devices comparatively across the market. But this has been interesting where I think across the board, I don't know that there is a region where the Mark IV was sold for cheaper than the Mark V, if that makes sense. I think the Mark V across the board is selling for less MSRP than the Mark IV launched at. Sore Hunter. And then the SD card removed. The companies tried to indoctrinate the users by saying, why do you want to use slower storage or the cloud? And people nowadays keep regurgitating it as if I need fast storage for storing music, photos, and videos. It's really frustrating. Because again, all of these issues you talk about, like, oh no, you shoot video, that's going to fill up. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why you want a memory card. I think I'm about caught up with the chat here. Yeah, Steve Pogue, similarly, I'm thinking that an Xperia 10, I really hope it's something like the 778. It would be awesome if Sony could get their hands on the 7 Plus Gen 2 after I've been using the 7 Plus Gen 2 on my Poco F5. This is nipping at the heels of the 8 Gen 1 and uses so much less power. So a phone that launched at the beginning of last year that would have cost you $1,000, like my Moto Edge or my Xperia 1 Mark IV or any of the Samsung Galaxy S22s or an S22 Pluses, this phone, the Poco F5, launched at an early bird for the equivalent of $380 US, is near that tier of performance of the 8 Gen 1, runs so much cooler, and draws so much less power than my Moto Edge or my Xperia 1 Mark IV. This is a champ. Now, again, it's a low-cost phone, so everything that goes along with that, the build quality, if you're really running it super, super hot and super, super hard, I would worry that the battery would start to degrade faster or that the motherboard might burn out sooner. I mean, it is an inexpensive phone built to be an inexpensive phone. But if you want that flagship killer price to performance, the 7 Plus Gen 2 is shockingly good. This is a leapfrog where we stayed with the Snapdragon 765 for so many years. Like the LG Wing had it, the Pixel 5 had it, the 765 was a champ. This feels like the next legitimate significant step for the mid-range, and this is overkill compute power. This is ridiculous compute power just to like, oh, let me check my TikToks. You know, like, it's insane what these pocket computers are capable of now. Let's see. Sore Hunter says, I pay less than $20 for 10 gig. Do you mean 10 gigabit broadband, or are you paying $20 for 10 gig of online storage? Because like, if I look up how much a $20 can get me for a memory card, sure, that would be like at least 128 gig card. I'm not sure what you're pointing to there. Let's see. Dave Burns is saying the dollar and the euro are pretty close right now, but I still thought that the... or am I thinking of the British pound? Is the British pound significantly more than the dollar? Or is it the euro is pretty close? So if they're selling it and the euro is close to the dollar, then it is like a $100 premium for the Sony in the EU. But it would still be... I think it would still be cheaper than the Mark IV was. I really don't know. Oh! So Rami is saying that it's $13.99 in Finland, and it was the same price as last year. Because in the EU, didn't you have both options? Because in the United States, we only got the 512 gig version. We didn't get a 256. So I thought the EU had a 256 at $13.99 and a 512 at $15.99, but I might have those numbers off. But I thought it was the same or cheaper. Again, we only got one flavor of it here. Catching up on the Nicholas is saying on the Sony homepage, the you get the XM on the Sony homepage, get X1000 M5 headphones if pre-order Xperia 1 Mark 5. So maybe get a new XPM5 instead for the 4. I don't know what you're trying to say there, Nicholas. I don't understand. Oh, okay. So Dave Burns is saying a British pound is $1.25. A euro is $1.09. So the euro is a little stronger than the dollar right now, but the pound is a lot stronger. Okay, good. So folks, I think that's where I got to cap it. I'm like sniffling and my voice is getting real rough in the background. So we gotta close this one down. But I'm going to have a lot more to say about the Xperia. So this is like my last day or so with the Xperia 1 Mark 5. This is the prototype. So this wasn't a retail consumer facing version of the phone. I've got to send this back to Sony. They were kind enough to let me just take this for a spin to really kind of dig into the new camera tech, not really to use it like a fully fleshed out phone. But I've been shooting way ahead. We're going to have a lot more to talk about for content creation, for shooting video. I've been using it quite a bit, hilariously enough, with my new Ulanzi video tripod. So this video tripod has been rocking my socks. This is one of the lightest portable carbon fiber tripods. It's got a fluid head, video head at the top. Is an incredible tripod. And it's just kind of silly that our phones have gotten so good and the video that we can shoot from our phones is so rad that if you wanted to go really lean, like especially if you were talking like journalism, mobile journalism, documentary, that kind of footage, it makes so much sense to pack light. Pack a phone with some good cameras, pack a really ultralight premium tripod, and just go super, super lean. This footage looks great, and then adding a really good tripod to the equation makes a lot of sense. But then especially if you had smaller camera bodies, like if you were shooting Micro Four Thirds, I don't know if Scoop is still in the chat, having a really lightweight portable tripod, that makes sense too. So I'm going to try and have a video out on that tripod sometime this week. I've got another camera tour that I want to do for the Xperia. And then I have a video where I want to compare the OnePlus Pad against my Razer Edge. So a purpose-built mini gaming tablet versus a more laptop replacement all-rounder, I think is just a fun showdown. It's not like a serious video. It's just like, hey, these things are built for different reasons. Let me show you why. So there's going to be a ton of stuff coming out on the channel still. I'm catching up with all these videos and the two things on my desk that I cannot show you yet. Those are going to be coming hopefully very, very soon. So I did. Lampros, I reached 2 hours, but man, by the skin of my vocal cords, because I got to shut up for the whole rest of the day now. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in, for jumping in. Tech Freak, thank you so much. I am going to be taking it easy, and I'll be drinking tea and trying to rest my vocal cords for the rest of the week here. But there's a lot of really fun stuff leading up into summer. So I hope everybody is out there having a good time with their tech, having a good time really digging into this stuff, and that we've got lots more coming up soon. So stay tuned. It's going to be a pretty wild ride. Folks, I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome. I want you to be awesome. I want you to take care of yourselves so that you can keep taking care of others, with all of my respect and appreciation for the jobs that you do. I will catch you here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show, episode 300. 300 episodes of the podcast. I don't have anything special planned. I'm going to reach out to some friends. Maybe we could do like a co-stream or a joint stream. I don't know. We'll see. I have no idea what. It might just end up being me again, and I'll say, hey, happy 300. But we'll see. It could be fun. I'll be back here next Monday. Another episode of the show. Stay tuned. Take care. I'll catch you back. I love y'all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.